July 20th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflohn.
And I'm Pam Bedar.
And we are here for another story with Sherlock Holmes. This, the last Sherlock Holmes novel, The Valley of Fear. We're almost done with the canon here.
I know, it seems so impossible, but it's true.
Well, one day COVID will go away and this will all just be a memory, like a dream.
No, I'm going to save these. They're going to be on the internet forever.
Oh, good. So people can revisit them forever.
100 years from now, people will be going, what was that thing where those people read that thing about that guy with the hat? Yeah, this is it. The Valley of Fear.
Well, let's find out about this crazy opening.
This is quite an interesting opening, isn't it? This is really Doyle throwing us into this adventure. He understands how much we know about Sherlock Holmes by 1915. Well, this is actually September of 1914 when the first chapter is published. And we don't need to have an introduction to who is this character, who is Watson. We just thrown straight into it.
So it opens with an incomplete sentence. I am inclined to think, said I. I should do so, Sherlock Holmes remarked impatiently. I believe that I am one of the most long-suffering of mortals, but I'll admit that I was annoyed at this sardonic interruption. Really, Holmes, said I severely, you are a little trying at times. And so we just open in the middle of a conversation between our two favorite characters. Bam.
That's a line that I use often. People say, I just thought of something. And my reply, and it's awful, I'm a terrible person. My reply is, first time?
but you know this. I mean, even if we were thinking about Watson and Holmes back in the late 1800s today, we know they're beginning some conversation. And we're just going to drop in so we can figure out whatever the adventure they're going to throw us through.
And that's where the episodic magazine publishing is different from a novel. That was one of the first questions that I asked you, Pam, was this book published monthly in a magazine? Because that changes the writing and it changes the way that the audience perceives the information.
And you can totally feel, even from chapter one, that this was published monthly in a magazine. It has such a great ending. And so we're going to get those sort of cliffhanger endings on many of the chapters.
We get to a new character in this. This is Porlock.
Now, sorry, you're going to get me all excited because Porlock is a super important name in romantic poetry. And I have an odd love of romantic poetry, which precedes my period by quite a bunch. But Holmes is examining an envelope and it's from Porlock. And Porlock is a pseudonym, we already know. So he says it's a nom de plume, so it's a pseudonym. But Porlock is this very famous town in romantic poetry. So I don't know if you guys know Coleridge's awesome poem, Kubla Khan. Like the opening might sound super familiar. In Xanadu did Kubla Khan a stately pleasure dome decree, where Alph the sacred river ran through caverns measureless to man, down to a sunless sea. Isn't that beautiful? Mm-hmm. This is from, you know, almost 100 years earlier.
Yeah, Chip just watched Xanadu last week.
I was going to say, let me put on some roller skates. Would you read that again?
That's why when you reviewed Xanadu on the other show, I said, oh, was Kubla Khan in it? And you went, no.
No.
Listen, ignorance is bliss at times. Ignorance truly is bliss.
That's why I'm the happiest guy here.
So anyway, back to Tale Samuel Coleridge and the beautiful romantic poem Kubla Khan. Now, this is a poem about the power of poetry, okay? And so, you know, not a roller skating poem. But anyway, it's this totally gorgeous poem, but it ends sort of suddenly. And in the preface, Coleridge wrote that he was totally going to finish the poem, but then a person from Porlock arrived and totally broke his flow. And that's it. He couldn't finish the poem. Here you have it. So that idea of a person from Porlock has become this sort of like, you know, clever way to talk about writer's block, basically. And Stevie Smith in the 70s wrote this awesome poem that I highly recommend called Thoughts on the Person from Porlock, which is hilarious. And it's about how we all have the person from Porlock. We all have those moments where we're writing and we're like, I wish someone would just show up. And so Doyle would definitely have known Coleridge's poem, which was about 70 years old at the time. And so I think that this sort of idea that there's this guy who uses this pseudonym and he's like an interrupter, right? An anonymous interrupter. That's who Porlock is.
Note to self, person from Porlock.
Right?
Yeah.
And use that to seem literate. All right, so I will be adding that.
And that can be code for all sorts of things, Chip. This can be a great cipher. If you say to us, oh, I have to go, there's a person from Porlock, we'll go, oh, okay, Chip. Chip has to go.
We'll be speaking code and no one around us will know.
Yep. That's what this mystery is all about in chapter one, that's for sure.
Now, Porlock is an agent of no one less than Professor Moriarty. Now, were you
going to... Dun, dun, dun!
Excited to get Moriarty? You were, right?
Oh, yes!
Yes! It's the best! So it's really... And Watson's totally on his game. So Holmes says, you have heard me speak of Professor Moriarty, the famous scientific criminal, as famous among crooks as... My blushes, Watson, Holmes murmured in a deprecating voice. I was about to say, as he is unknown to the public. A touch, a distinct touch, cried Holmes. You are developing a certain unexpected vein of pocky humor, Watson, against which I must learn to guard myself.
This is so cheeky. The two of them, the audience, we know these two men so well, and Doyle here is writing how well they know each other.
Exactly, because obviously Watson was going to say that Moriarty is as famous among crooks as you are among detectives. And then as soon as Holmes anticipates that, Watson changes it up. So
he's so modest, that Holmes.
I know, yeah.
That's such good writing, because anticipating it so much, and exactly. He knocks down our expectations.
And he knows that he is also raising our expectations, right? Because there's this weird moment of sort of mixed temporalities, because Holmes says that he will hopefully one day meet Moriarty face to face. Now, remember, this is being published in 1415, about 1888, whereas the final problem, when Holmes and Moriarty do actually meet, is already years before us. It was published in 1893, about 1891. So
this is so confusing.
Like, but Doyle is playing with our expectations, right? Because as a reader, we're like, when Holmes says, but if I am spared by lesser men, our day will surely come, as in he wants to meet Moriarty. May I be there to see, I exclaimed devoutly. Well, we reader know, and the Victorian reader knew it just as we do. Yeah, Watson is going to be there, and he's going to get called away on the fake medical emergency, at which point his best friend is going to grapple to his apparent death with Professor Moriarty. So it's a really fun moment here.
And as readers, we're all yelling at Holmes. We're like, bring a piece of paper, bring a pen, you're going to use it.
Moriarty was such a great character that Doyle absolutely needed to use him again, but it's so interesting to think that we are talking about 18 years later?
Yep.
18, that's almost a full generation of humans between the introduction of this great character and this second use of him here.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, Chip.
What?
We get a cipher in this story.
Yeah, you're just puzzling with me.
I love a good puzzle. That's what we started. This whole idea of this show was to get a puzzle so we can keep our minds off of our current condition with COVID. Here's a cipher that we get to try to figure out. And this cipher is something that we couldn't possibly figure out. And so Doyle gives us the answer to it almost immediately, and it's the most fun way that we've seen a cipher done in this writing.
And it's, I mean, again, the relationship between Holmes and Watson is so hilarious here. well, and we meet Billy the Page again.
Okay, oh, and poor Billy. By a again, this is actually the first introduction of Billy the Page.
Right.
Because
it's again for us. You're right.
Yeah, and he's just introduced as, and then his page Billy walked in, and then his page Billy handed us something, and his page Billy walked out. The end of introduction of new character. That's curious.
Well, you know, Watson's wives will, you know, next wife will get even less of an introduction.
Never be named. Never.
To be named later.
At least we know his name's Billy.
he's a person.
He's not a mop.
That's right.
The cipher is so fun here. Holmes explains the concept of a cipher to us, the audience, and to Watson, because somehow we didn't know up until now. It is obviously an attempt to convey secret information, he says. But what use of a cipher message without the cipher, says Watson. In this instance, none at all. Why do you say in this instance? Holmes goes on to explain. Let me explain. Because there are many ciphers which I would read as easily as I do the apocrypha of the agony column. Such crude devices amuse the intelligence without fatiguing it. But this is different. This is clearly a reference to the words in the page of some book. Until I'm told which page and which book, I am powerless. This is a great cipher. This is something that, hey kids, you can do this at home. Pick a book off of the shelf. Find words in that book, count which word it is on which page, and you can send your friend a message as long as they have a copy of the identical book on their shelf.
And make sure you drink her Ovaltine, right, Steve?
Yes, this is fun, adventurous childhood memories for me, for sure.
Gene Shepard never wrote such a great cipher, and disappointment in a child's life in A Christmas Story, right? A stupid advertisement.
We'll shoot your eye out, kid.
And Holmes is imagining that the book is going to arrive by the afternoon mail. But alas, instead of a book, they get a message from Porlock saying, Moriarty's on to me. Forget that I just burn the message that I sent you. You'll never hear from me again. Goodbye. So, of course, Holmes says, well, if Porlock's not giving us any information, we're through, and throws the cipher onto the fire. So then Holmes figures, actually, I thought this was, there's much humor in the discussion here, because Watson says, oh no, it's too bad we're never going to get the cipher. He says, it's pretty maddening to think that an important secret may lie here on the slip of paper, and that it is beyond human power to penetrate it.
Don't overstate that.
And Holmes says, perhaps there are points which have escaped your Machiavellian intellect.
as we rip out your heart once again, here we go.
Because, you know, like Machiavellian, that's like cunning or scheming, unscrupulous. I don't think of Watson as having a Machiavellian. So then I laughed so hard as I was reading this, because Holmes walks Watson through. How are we going to figure out the cipher? He's like, well, it's a very long book, since one of the clues is on page 534. C2. What do you think C2 means? He asks. Oh, that's probably chapter 2, says Watson. At which point Holmes says, if page 534 finds us only in the second chapter, the length of the first one must have been intolerable. I'll agree too. So then,
yeah, COVID-19. Your first chapter's way too long.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Whoever's writing this dystopia is just, I'm not buying another copy of this author's work.
So then Watson's like, wait, maybe it means column 2. Yes, says Holmes, that's exactly what it means. The Bible, I cried triumphantly. And then I gotta love Holmes here. Good, Watson, good. But not, if I may say so, quite good enough. Even if I accepted the compliment for myself, I could hardly name any volume which would be less likely to lie at the elbow of one of Moriarty's associates.
No, none of his people would have that book, the Bible. No.
And he's like, if I accept the compliment, he's not like exactly a super biblical scholar himself. Then Watson, undeterred by any of this criticism, is like, how about Bradshaw's? And that's a book of railway timetables and travel guides. And so Holmes is like, well, another interesting thought, my dear Watson, but the vocabulary is perhaps a bit limited. So that,
do you think, is Holmes like tapping him on the head when he says that?
Seriously. the almanac, says Watson. And then it gets even more funny because now they start looking up like this, you know, town in India, the pig bristles is one of the words. And this is like, I don't know, buddy. I don't know if this is right. And then Holmes says, oh my goodness, we're being punished for being too up to date. It's January 7th. We already have the new almanac. I bet this is written on the old almanac. And that's when they're able to decipher the cipher. So it is so much fun. This whole scene is just hilarious.
Well, John Cleese will be playing.
Right?
This is absolutely a fun opening to book. This is selling magazines for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so then we get to this weird line where Sherlock is trying to pat Watson on the head so nicely. He says, there, Watson, what do you think of pure reason and its fruit? If the greengrocer had such a thing as a laurel wreath, I should send Billy round for it. He wants a prize for solving this cipher in chapter one. He thinks he deserves a prize for this.
A little Pavlov's dog right there. Here you go. Here's a cracker. Here we go. Oh,
a laurel and hearty handshake.
But alas, the greengrocer does not sell laurels. Laurel wreath.
Pam, do you know that reference?
I do not. Sorry.
Oh, that's Blazing Saddles. That is not a Chicago-based movie, but a laurel and hearty handshake.
Oh, sorry. I totally missed it. Damn it.
We get the police involved in chapter one, surprisingly, huh?
Now, this is the only book that Alec MacDonald is in, although Watson introduces him as if we already know. You guys know Alec MacDonald because he's pretty famous today, but back in the 1880s, he was still a young man and not so famous as he is right now. And that's actually the first time he tells us the timeline of this, which is kind of interesting because he's already talked about Moriarty. So the way he describes Alec MacDonald is interesting because he's going to be a main character of the story. He was a young but trusted member of the detective force who had distinguished himself in several cases which had been entrusted to him. His tall, bony figure gave promise of exceptional physical strength, while his great cranium and deep-set lustrous eyes spoke no less clearly of the keen intelligence which twinkled out from behind his bushy eyebrows. He was a silent, precise man with a dour nature and a hard Aberdonian accent. So a very serious guy. My girls noticed that just like Holmes was described as having bushy eyebrows earlier in this chapter, so too is Alec MacDonald. And they're both tall guys with like large foreheads indicating their brain power. So there's sort of a little bit of a, you know, mentorship mentee feeling, I think, to the relationship between the two men. And it's clear that he has consulted with Holmes before and he's coming to Holmes as like a, please help us out, not a, I'm holding my nose and coming to you, Holmes. He really wants Holmes' help.
Steve, do you have that Aberdonian accent down?
Yes, please.
I think it's probably... He's from Aberdeen. He's an Aberdonian.
Oh, that's good.
Hello, my name is Alec MacDonald.
Not bad.
I'm from Aberdeen.
Although I'm not sure you captured the doer nature of this man.
I just like saying Aberdeen. Because there's a lot of E's in Aberdeen. This comes to an ending very quickly here. When this officer walks in and they've already solved the cipher, they're already on the case, and he's walking in and he happens to be on the same case.
And the ending of this is so great. And it's true that after reading the short stories, which are much longer, didn't you feel like you had just started reading and the chapter was already over? Like,
it was as if the writer kind of put this all together for us.
I can't wait to buy next month's magazine. Right? This is a really good marketing ending for chapter one for sure.
So McDonald just happens to look down at the table and he sees the cipher, which has the word Mr. Douglas and Burlstone in it. Douglas, he stammered. Burlstone, what's this, Mr. Holmes? Man, it's witchcraft. Where in the name of all that is wonderful did you get those names? It is a cipher that Dr. Watson and I have had occasion to solve. But why? What's amiss with the names? The inspector looked from one to the other of us in dazed astonishment. Just this, said he, that Mr. Douglas of Burlstone Manor House was horribly murdered last night.
Dun, dun, dun!
Right? End of chapter.
And then you go on to whatever the next article is in the magazine, which is nowhere near as fun as this.
It's a jello mold, Steve. I just want to let you know.
There you go. With tuna in it.
lime jello.
Lime jello and tuna. Ugh. This was such a great opening. This is almost no introduction to the characters again, including Billy, who just walked in. Hi, Billy. And it's we exist in this universe with these people, and it's wonderful.
And we're just right there.
And they're so playful. They're just the best of friends here, just prodding each other, and it's wonderful.
And if you were going to cast this performance, you're like, and Steve, you can play Holmes, Pam Watson, and the neighbor, you'll play Billy. And it's like, oh, I've got a part. And they realize.
Letter for you, sir.
But you guys, this is when Watson and Holmes live together. And you can feel that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's something now that we've read the whole canon, that you can feel how at different times in their lives they were roommates, and you could feel when that's the case. And then when Watson is married and Holmes is kind of calling him in, and then obviously it's quite a different relationship in their later years. So this is a really fun 1915 throwback to the late 1880s, that period of Watson and Holmes that's everybody's favorite. That's where we are for this one. So
awesome.
Super fun to be reading.
So I'm excited. We've got a great ending and we're ready to take on chapter two.
Yep. We will discuss that on Wednesday. I hope that you are reading along with us, thinking along with us, and enjoying this as much as we are. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Send us an email. Follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes for all of that feedback from around the world. And go to our dedicated Sherlock Holmes website, sandwiches@irregularhours.com, for the list of all of the conversations for the entire canon of Sherlock Holmes from Arthur Conan Doyle. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
And I'm Pam Bedour. Looking forward to seeing you in the Valley of Fear.
Glass of apple cipher.
Good one.
How is that a good one?
That was awful.
Don't tell him that was good. Don't lie to people. You're Canadian. You're not supposed to lie.
I'm sorry.